Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
Okay, if you get overwhelmed by emails, have a love-hate relationship with Facebook, or can't relax in your hyper-connected home, you're not alone. Research is showing that in this digital age, despite all those great benefits with it, it's certainly making us more unproductive and highly distracted. But that's nothing new, according to author William Powers. Never mind smartphones, he says every new communication device in history, from the telegraph to the printing press to the written word itself, caused similar waves of anxiety in its day. Thankfully, there is a solution. He says we just need to balance our hyper-connectedness with a healthy dose of disconnection. His book is called Hamlet's Blackberry, and he's on the line now. William, welcome to Open House.
Thank you. Great to be here.
I'm intrigued by the title, Hamlet's Blackberry. We'll get to Hamlet's mysterious little handheld device in a second. But first off, your book starts talking about this idea of digital maximalism. Just explain that, because that kind of will put our conversation into a bit of context.
Yes. Well, in writing the book, I realized that I needed a phrase to describe the philosophy that I think we've basically been following with our digital devices. And it's not a conscious philosophy, but I think it really is an approach, a way of thinking about them that we've been using to guide our behavior for almost two decades now. And basically what it comes down to is the more connected you are, the better. Hmm. You know, that's basically how many of us, I dare say most of us in the developed world, are living now. You basically can't be too connected. And so to boil that down to a phrase, I called it in the book digital maximalism, i.e., you know, the more the better.
Yeah, okay, the more connected you are, the better off you are. And of course, there are wonderful, wonderful benefits to actually being connected in this way. I mean, I love Facebook, I really enjoy Twitter, and all those other things that the social media in their various forms is actually allowing. But we've really got to manage it, don't we? Because there are some downsides to it. We've explored those on this show before. Unproductivity, the lack of creativity, the loss of face-to-face relationship, those kinds of things. There are some downsides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's lots of downsides. Yeah, and I want to emphasize in the book the part you said at the beginning of your comment just now about the upsides. I devote a lot of the book to that because I really believe that. I myself dove right into this digital life from the start and was even a kind of, in some ways, early adopter of many of the technologies, and I still enjoy it. Mm. But I reached a point maybe 5 years ago when I started to realize that for all the benefits I was getting out of these gadgets, they were beginning to impose a burden and were subtracting stuff that I didn't want to see subtracted from my life, some of those things you mentioned.
One of the quotes in the book you have, whenever I open a gap between myself and my screens, good things happen.
That was what I started to notice, was I had a couple of epiphanies where I found myself without a digital device, in one case by accident, and it struck me that this way I'd been living really was taking away an experience and a way of being in the world that was important to me that I missed. It was that idea of sort of the self-contained person who doesn't have to be checking all the time to see if people are checking in with him, mm-hmm. and who's not constantly monitoring the world beyond, basically the person who can be by himself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't that person anymore, and I decided, this is now going back maybe 4 years, that I really wanted to reverse that and get some of that old way of life back. We all have our insecurities and doubts, you know, am I in the swim? Am I living life the way I should? As you say, am I missing out on something? And digital connectedness really plays to all of those vulnerabilities and also delivers confirmation in a good way, you know, reminds us, I am alive, I have friends out there, I have loved ones, even though they're far away, now I can converse with them and so forth, and that's all terrific. But when that is really all you do 24/7, except when you're sleeping, which, let's face it, is how many people are living now, you really are living a completely outward life. You're focusing on your external life, the life beyond yourself, rather than the internal life, which is just as important. You know, philosophers have been saying for thousands of years, for true happiness, you have to strike a balance between the inner self and the outer self, the outer life, or you're never going to be happy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I think we're in an imbalance now.
Yeah. therein lies the key, that balance between that connection and disconnection, crowd time and solitude. William Powers is the author of Hamlet's Blackberry, and he's joining us to talk about this whole idea of social media and just how we can get the balance right. Some wonderful benefits, also some downsides, and how can we manage those downsides? This is Open House across the nation. Okay, so you've delved into the writings of some of the great thinkers throughout history to, I guess, get that balance right about connection and disconnection. Let's just touch on a few of those great thinkers. Let's talk about what Socrates learnt. Now, of course, we know about Socrates through the works of Plato, and Socrates is considered, you know, maybe even the first, one of the first great philosophers in history. Talk about the challenges that he had in his time.
Yes, it's very interesting. You know, in Socrates' lifetime and also Plato's, Socrates was older, but they straddled the same era. The alphabet, you know, written language caught on in Greece for the first time. It had been around for hundreds of years as a commercial tool to take care of business, basically. But people hadn't used it to communicate personally or to communicate ideas. So suddenly this idea of written documents, written books, written letters took off when Socrates was sort of in his latter decades. And he was really, really worried about it and warned his students not to mess with that writing stuff because he said it would basically destroy their ability to think.
There you are.
Yeah. So he was an early Luddite way before the word Luddite existed.
And because, you know, Socrates is well known for walking around the streets of Athens, challenging people to really think about what they do and what they choose and what they say. Why are you thinking that? Why? What's behind, you know, this action that you've taken? So what can we learn then about Socrates? He had this kind of anxiety then about the written word, and then he did run around in the crowds a lot. Where did he get his solitude from?
Right, so I tell a story in the book. It's one of Plato's dialogues. It's called Phaedrus. And it's a story about Socrates running into a young man on the streets of Athens who invites him to take a walk in the country to talk about a philosophical question. And Socrates is really hesitant about this and basically says, you know, I hate to go into the countryside because there's nobody to talk to there. My whole life is about conversation. So you might say he was kind of addicted to the connectedness of his own generation, which was oral, you know, talking. Mm. And he didn't see why the heck you'd ever want to be out in nature when you couldn't be conversing. That was really what he cared about, and almost 100% of his life was talking. And he said, why would I want to get away from the crowd? Well, this young man convinces him to take this walk, and they have this fantastic conversation, which I summarized parts of. And basically what Socrates learns, and he basically admits it, is that, gosh, there really is something to putting distance between yourself and the crowd. You can have a whole different kind of connection if you go off and do that with a friend or even by yourself. And he doesn't literally say that, but that's the message of the dialogue.
Mm-hmm. So the application for us is, it's okay, go for a walk.
Exactly. Just put some distance between yourself and what is the crowd today, which in our case, I mean, there's all kinds of crowds. But the most powerful crowd today that we're trying to navigate each day is the digital crowd. So take a walk and leave your mobile in the drawer.
It's as simple as that. Socrates told it to us centuries ago. Okay, Shakespeare, and this is where we get to this intriguing title of your book, Hamlet's Blackberry. Hamlet had his own little kind of Blackberry-type device all those centuries ago.
Right. So this was something that Shakespeare inserted into the play Hamlet because it was a gadget that was tremendously popular in Shakespeare's time. It was called a table, usually in the plural, table with an S on the end.
Uh-huh.
And it was a little booklet that people carried around in Renaissance Europe with an erasable surface inside that you wrote on with a stylus during the day. To-do notes, addresses of people you wanted to remember, anything you wanted to note during the day you could write down, and then at the end of the day you could wipe it clean. And this was quite an innovative thing for people, and they really started to use it to organize their lives in a time when life was getting much more complicated, partly because of print technology had taken off by this time. And there was all kinds of information to navigate. And Hamlet, in the play, meets the ghost for the first time, the ghost of his father, gets this terrible news about his father's murder, and immediately says, oh, my mind is so distracted and filled with clutter, I have to clear it all away. And he says, my tables, my tables.
Hmm.
And he takes this gadget out of his pocket and begins to take notes on it. So that really is, you know, a kind of a precursor in Shakespeare's time and in one of his plays to the relationship we have today to our iPhones and our BlackBerry.
Yes, very much so. So where do you draw a modern application out of that for us?
Yeah, so there's a couple of lessons in that one. One is that, you know, we're not alone in the kind of addictive relationship we have to our gadgets. Yeah. But the second lesson is that this particular technology was a fashionable technology like our iPhones and BlackBerries that helped people make their lives a little bit less cluttered and a little bit less crazy. And the problem with our devices is that we've reached a point where they're making our lives more crazy. So the message of that chapter in the book is that technologists need to get on the case. And as these devices we're using evolve, they should help us get away from all that maximum connectedness we talked about earlier so that we can organize it better. I think there's all kinds of ways they can do that, and I hope they are on the case. I've been hearing from some of them who've been reading the book, and they sound like they are determined to do something about it.
We're exploring some of the great minds of history and how they felt about the technologies of their day and kind of drawing out some lessons that they learned and can pass on to us when it comes to social media, iPhones, smartphones, those kinds of things. We're talking to William Power. He's the author of Hamlet's BlackBerry. This is Open House Across the Nation. Henry David Thoreau now, very well known for his little experiment in simplicity when he went out to live at Walden Pond.
Yes. Yes, so Thoreau is often thought of as somebody who was just anti-technology, who just ran away from the present and from, you know, modern things and went back to nature. But in fact, that's not the case. His cabin that he built at Walden Pond was a very short walk from the busy town of Concord, where he spent most of his life. He was back and forth all the time. He entertained as many as 30 people at a time in that one-room cabin while he was living at Walden. He was almost a social animal in many ways. But the point of his experiment was to set up a zone where he could be away from the crowd and all that crazy busyness of his era, mm-hmm. which included the telegraph, the mail system, the railroad. He could be away from that when he wanted to. So he set up a zone, basically, for the inward life to offset the busy outward life. Mm-hmm. So I use that, Sheridan, to propose that we could do the same with our own homes. We could all have rooms in our homes that you might call a Walden zone where no screens are allowed. Families could do this, particularly that have children who are on the hyper-connected side of things. Another option is a Walden zone that would be organized by time, where you have days of the week or hours of the day when you're offline. And my family, in fact, does something like that.
Right, yeah. Again, just managing that balance between being connected and then being disconnected, having both crowd time and also solitude. Another of the great philosophers, Seneca, had something to teach us here too, with maybe, I guess, the tools being just a simple pen and pad of paper.
Yeah, so Seneca talked about life in ancient Rome, where he was extremely busy. For a number of years in Rome, he was effectively the emperor, running the empire under Nero. And Seneca says that people in Rome were so busy navigating this world of empire and these cities that had risen up, which were larger than any cities the world had known before and fuller of people. His colleagues and he were suffering from what he called the restless energy of a hunted mind, that's a quote. And I love that quote because it reminds me of the way we're pursued today by our inboxes and all those people that we have on our mobiles. So what Seneca did, as you indicated, is he had this ritual he would do where he would get himself in a room and tune out all the noise and distractions around him by sitting with a pen and paper and just writing a letter to one person. And it was just that idea of choosing a person out of the multitude of people that he was effectively connected to and focusing on them. It's really a matter of simple focus. And he describes it as a kind of liberation.
Yeah, and that speaks directly to the fact that the social media that we have tend to make us very distracted. We are always looking at that new email coming in or the text message that just arrived or indeed the phone call that's coming in or whatever. What was that phrase again? The hunted mind? What was it?
The restless energy of a hunted mind.
I'm going to remember that. The restless energy of a hunted mind.
I love that. And you know, what you say about Facebook is so true. You know, the more friends we have on Facebook, the less time we have to devote to any one of them. Mm. So it's like the opposite of focus. You know, and so Seneca's advice is you got to move yourself in the other direction and pick some people and really spend some time and energy on them.
So these old great minds, and these are centuries, sometimes millennia old minds that actually have gone through all of this before us, just with different sorts of technology. It just reminds you, you know, there's nothing new under the sun in many ways. So as you've been researching this book, William, what kind of changes have you brought into your own life and your own family? You've touched on a couple in terms of, you know, just starting to have some no internet zones and timeouts, etc., for your kids. What about you yourself? What have you done to, I guess, balance this continuum between being connected to the crowd and having solitude?
Yeah, I've done a number of things. I mean, the biggest thing we've done as a family is we disconnect every weekend. We're offline Saturday and Sunday of every week. We call it the Internet Sabbath. And that's been fantastic for all of us individually and also for our relatedness. There's three of us, my wife and me and my son, who's 12. That's worked out great. We're in our fourth year of that, and that's been terrific. But I have other smaller things I do. I'll tell you one that I've developed recently, actually only since the book came out. I was so busy, often on the internet and on my mobile, doing interviews about the book this past summer, that I realized I needed something to settle down my mind first thing in the morning, because I would get up and feel like I needed to run to the screen right away to check what was happening and did somebody need to interview me and so forth.
Yeah.
So I developed a new ritual. I'd never done this before, of reading a book, an old-fashioned, you know, paper book, first thing in the morning. So I just sit by myself, usually in a corner of my bedroom where I have a chair, and I just read a book for a half hour, 40 minutes. And because in an old-fashioned book, no emails can come in or texts or anything, it's a wonderful way of kind of reminding yourself that there are these spaces where the mind can be quiet.
Yes.
And I have found that to be a very helpful ritual.
This is why I champion still the paper book. I know that e-books are going to be coming in rapidly. Well, there's a little bit of this. There's a number of various thoughts about e-books and how successful they're really going to be. And they certainly won't wipe out the paper book. But there is just something still so beautiful about the smell of that paper and the fact that, as you said, you can just sit there and you can focus. If you've got it on your iPad or on your Kindle, no doubt very soon all of those other emails are going to be coming onto that very same device. And you're going to be distracted still. Just another reason why we should champion the paper book, William. That's what I'm on about.
It's true. You know, this book grew out of an essay I wrote on that topic at Harvard when I was a fellow at Harvard a few years ago. What I have concluded is that I think the utility of the paper book is rising the more digital we become, precisely because it's sort of this island of tranquility in the midst of a digital world. I'm completely on your team.
Good. I'm glad there's two of us. Well, good to talk to you, William. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. It was my pleasure, Shada.
Yeah. William Powers is the author of Hamlet's Blackberry, A Practical Philosophy for Building a Good Life in the Digital Age.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast, thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.